The Volume.
Boxing with Chris Mannix is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. There's no better place to bet the action than on FanDuel Sportsbook during the football season. I bet on FanDuel as often and as comfortably as I possibly can. It is America's number one sportsbook. It's easy to use. It's safe and secure. There are fast payouts in as quick as 2 hours. So many bet types. Same game parlay bets, live betting, player props, futures, and so much more. If you are new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app to get started right now. Sign up with the promo code BOXING so they know I sent you.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back. Another episode of Boxing with Chris Mannix, part of the Volume Sports Podcast Network. We have an excellent show for you today. We are in Las Vegas, the site of Devin Haney, his lightweight title defense against Jojo Diaz. I got a couple of guests joining me in person. First up, Sergio Mora, the former junior middleweight champion, DAZN boxing analyst. We run through all the news of the last week, from Teofimo Lopez's stunning loss to George Kambosos to what that means for Kambosos, a big fight between Haney and Diaz this weekend, a big fight between Gervonta Davis and Isaac Cruz on Sunday as well. All that and more with Sergio Mora. A little bit later on, the George Kambosos World Tour comes through this podcast. Kambosos sits down with me and talks about his win, what's coming next, what his week has been like, everything you want to know from George Kambosos. As always, best way to support this podcast, get over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, on to the show. All right. Are you good?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Put your phone down. All right, we're not doing the phone thing, okay? Could you just put your phone down? No, not with the Invisalign. Not with the Invisalign. And now.
Disgusting.
All right, Sergio Mora is here, as you hear in the background. Todd Grisham as well in the room. Sergio is going to post his Invisalign removal on social media. Would you focus, please? I need you to focus.
I'm ready to go.
You're not ready
multitasker,
to go.
Multitasker.
You're not multitasking.
Let's do it.
Okay. What's your name?
Sergio Mora.
Right. Nailed it. We are here in Las Vegas, the site of Devin Haney's WBC lightweight title defense against Jojo Diaz. We're going to get into that. We're also going to talk about Gervonta Davis taking on Isaac Cruz. That happens on Sunday, the rare Sunday afternoon, or evening, I should say, boxing show. But Sergio, first, I want to look back at this past weekend, maybe the upset of the year, depending on what you like. You know, Gabe Rosado's win over Bektimir Melikuziev was right up there. But George Kambosos going into Madison Square Garden and beating Teofimo Lopez by decision. That was huge, man. Like, give me your kind of, now that we're a few days away from that that fight, give me your takeaways from it.
Kambosos Jr. Comes from Spartan lineage, right? And he's very proud of that. He came out with the Spartan trunks and everything. And he came, he saw, he conquered in the backyard of the undisputed champion of the world. Now, undisputed, let's not get into the politics of it. He took all the belts. He took all the belts in the fighter's hometown, home state. It was incredible because he said exactly what he was going to do, and he had to face adversity to do it. I mean, we know what Teofimo is. He's a beast. He's a beast, and he came out like a beast. So for him to be prepared for those early rounds, that early onslaught, feel the power, get dropped, I think it was the 10th round, right before the championship rounds, and react like a champion in a fight that you're winning. Normally, you know, you coast at that time. Nah, not George Kambosos. It was a hell of a fight. And if it's not fight of the year, I don't know what else will, because this is for all the belts, and it just made sense for everything. You could check every box.
You
incredible
know, back,
fight.
Back in February of 2020, Tyson Fury, before he fought Deontay Wilder the second time, told us exactly how he was going to fight him. He said, I'm going to take the fight to Deontay Wilder. I'm going to bully him, and I'm going to knock him out. Nobody believed him then, and that's exactly what he did in that fight in February of 2020. I bring that up because in the days before Kambosos fought Teofimo Lopez, what did he do? He told us over and over again exactly what he was going to do. When I suggested to him that maybe boxing a little and getting out of those first few rounds was the way to go, kind of scoffed. He's like, no, I'm going to take the fight to him. I'm going to knock him down in that first round. That's exactly what he did. Like, very rarely, Sergio, do we see a guy able to back up his words in the way that Kambosos did.
The last time I remember is Sandor Martin, the guy that upset Mikey Garcia, and he was equally as confident, equally as, you know, he walked into the room with swag, and he knows that he's unbeaten and untested, and everyone's laughing at him or scoffing at him, like you said. This was a Sandor Martin type performance, but on the undisputed level, on the big stage.
You think this is a bigger upset?
Oh, yeah. Oh, by far. By far. Definitely. Because Mikey Garcia had inactivity. I mean, both of them had inactivity, but I just think this was different. It was on a different level. You're in the mecca of boxing. You're in New York City. I mean, everything was there for the perfect experience for Teofimo Lopez to continue everything that he did. It was a takeover, but the takeover got taken over. And that's the first thing I said once they announced the winner, because what George Kambosos did was incredible. It was something where it's going to be remembered. Whether he holds on to these belts for long or not, what he did that night and where he did it is going to be remembered, because that's all the stars aligning and it's perfect.
All right, so magic. Before we move on from this, where did Teofimo Lopez go wrong? And does he need to make a substantial change to anything as he heads up to 140 pounds?
No, and I just think he started off way too aggressively, fought emotionally, and anytime you have a fighter on the championship level fighting with emotion, he's already taken two steps back, because you're fighting an unknown, unheralded up-and-comer who wants everything you worked hard for, and you're willing to give it away in the first minute of the fight, giving him exactly what he's expecting? No, you don't do that. So that's amateurish, and I hate to call, you know, Teofimo Lopez amateurish, but he came out like he wanted to take, like he bet on himself to get a first round knockout and he wanted to complete it. And anytime you go looking for the knockout, bad things happen. Ask any fighter that. You don't fight emotional. You fight with a game plan all the way to the end. You see him hurt, then you go for it. But it was just not smart.
Well, you say you see him hurt and then you go for it. George Kambosos was hurt in that 10th round. He was down with just under 2 minutes to go in that round. And that was the opportunity for Teofimo Lopez. But in my eyes, he just kept loading up on shots. I didn't get that. Like, why not go and swarm him and try to make the referee come in and stop the fight? I thought that was a catastrophic mistake from Lopez, because he was just sitting there looking for that Richard Comey-type knockout, and that never came, and that gave George enough time to recover and finish the round strong.
I don't blame Teofimo not going for the knockout, because he respected Kambosos' power, and Kambosos had the perfect answer to his aggression, which was an overhand right. And then once he saw that coming, it was a right hook to the body and a straight right hand to the body just to set up that overhand right again. Teofimo didn't fight like he normally does, which is real fluid. His his combinations and his punches that he selects, it's really pretty to see, and he does it with power. He didn't do all that. He didn't even jab George Kambosos. It was pride incarnate. Is that the word?
Not specifically.
Don't be laughing at me. It was pride and not a fight. It was just basically, you saw a man that was fueled by his emotion, ego, and pride. And that's not a world champion. That's not a world champion. And that's not a boxer that's on his level.
How much blame do you put on Teofimo Sr.? Because his advice between rounds was bad. Beginning in the first round, after Teofimo gets knocked down, Senior says, what are you doing? Get him out of here. Like, clearly Kambosos came to fight. Clearly he's a little bit better than what they thought he was going to be. I didn't like the advice coming from the corner throughout the course of the fight. Like, what do you do there?
It was pride, and you see where the sun gets it from. It's just basic embarrassment mixed with pride, mixed with ego.
Yeah, but that's not what you want from your corner. Like, your corner has to be level-headed, and it's got to be giving you savvy advice.
And that's the reason I think Senior should be demoted. That's the word I used before. I'm going to stick with it.
I don't disagree.
I don't think he should be fired, because you can't fire family, but he should be
Well, sure you can. Family gets fired all the time.
Well, he gets fired all the time, but not when you have that kind of connection with his father. I mean, anytime Teofimo, he posted something about him and his dad and a picture, you know, something about family, loyalty, something you know nothing about, Magnus. But in boxing, it's a blood sport. But whenever you have something that connected, it's just too close to home.
I like how I'm the one that is disloyal, but you just suggested demoting his father.
Demoting doesn't mean fired.
Okay, but that's still a kick in the
demoting means cajones. You're still working, but you're not at the top spot anymore.
Correct. I don't think Teofimo Sr. would accept that at all. Like, he seems that's like someone has that has consolidated power within there. One of the biggest problems I thought going into this fight was that Teofimo Sr. was effectively doing it on his own. Like, where was Joey Gamache, who was a strategist going to the Lomachenko fight? He was gone. Where were the folks from Perfecting Athletes who had gotten Teofimo to that 135-pound limit in the safest and healthiest possible way? I don't think he came in as prepared as he could have been. You know, he comes in with the same preparation and the same team as he did for the Lomachenko fight. I think he wins. He might win by knockout.
That's arrogance. And he said something about money and financials and how expensive this strength and conditioning was.
But you know something about this.
And I was about to bring it up, Mannix. Don't interrupt me.
Yeah, my bad.
I spent $10,000 a month when I fought Vernon Forrest the first time and for the Shane Mosley fight. A month. That's a lot of money. But they handle your strength training. They handle your meals. They handle your cardio. They handle everything. Everything's like a computer. Now, I didn't use this company he used, but I used someone that did a great job. And I was in the best shape of my life. And both those times I fought at 154. As an amateur, I didn't even fight at 154. And I felt strong because they make you lose the weight the right way. You actually, instead of cutting down your meals, you're eating more. It's weird. Devin Haney told us this in the fighter meetings. You're eating more, getting stronger, and losing weight. There's a science to it. That's why there's smarter people than me that know how to do that. He did it the old school way, Teofimo did. And a lot of fighters do it the old school way. That's all they know. But if you want to be at your optimum best, that's a pretty good word. At your peak.
The wrong one. It's optimal.
At your peak, actually need to find a scientist in order to bring into the sweet science. It's the perfect way to go.
I don't disagree. I think going it on your own is not the way to do it. You need to invest in yourself, invest in your body, and it'll pay off down the line. So Teofimo, he's going up to 140 at some point soon. George Kambosos we'll get back to in a minute, but we are here for Haney against Diaz, another huge fight in the lightweight division. Jojo Diaz is an underdog. How live an underdog is he in this fight?
Very live. Very live. I've known Jojo Diaz since he was 8 years old in South Almani. And I see one of his coaches in his corner, Ben Lira's. I've known Ben Lira since I started boxing. I made my bones in South Almani gym. So did Jojo Diaz as an 8-year-old. I know what this kid turned champion, turned man has gone through. Now, Devin Haney is being groomed for greatness. This is a star that they're setting him up for the Floyd Mayweather Jr. level. And in the same steps as Sugar Ray Leonard. They're grooming him for that type of greatness, and he has the potential to be all that. And he has more than a big team. He has an entourage, but they're all validated.
What a good entourage.
Ben Davidson is part of the entourage now. It just really impresses me what a senior, being a good father, being a great father, letting his son go with the best, Eddie Mustafa Muhammad, Floyd Mayweather Sr., going to up north with Virgil Hunter, I believe, and now going with Ben Davidson. That's how a father needs to treat their son. You don't try to vicariously live through your son and taking all the limelight. You let someone else take that role, and you're in the back like you're supposed to be, because you're just there to support. And let your son become the star and enjoy your son become a star.
You know what I thought was interesting? A couple things. One is in the fighter meeting, and we don't want to reveal too much about what was happening in the fighter meeting. You can watch the show on Saturday for that. But in the fighter meeting, compare the relationship between Teofimo Sr. and Teofimo Lopez Jr. and Bill Haney and Devin. Like, in the fighter meeting with Teofimo, the two Teofimos, they were kind of talking over each other a lot. There was a lot of kind of, you know, just confusion a little bit. Every time that Devin Haney opened his mouth, whether it was Bill Haney talking or somebody else, it got quiet. I remember, and I forget who it was that was speaking at the time, but when Mickey Bay, when he started speaking and Devin started speaking, Bill said, hold on, yep. Let Devin speak, Devin speak. Bill Haney gets it. Like, Bill Haney understands what it takes to be a father and a trainer. To your point, like, he brings in all different voices. He has given Ben Davison a lead role in this team. He is chief strategist, basically, for this team. He's the one devising the game plans.
Great decision,
for
too,
Devin Haney. It's a great decision. Ben Davison is a brilliant boxing mind. All the people he's brought in have added something to this team, and they have made Devin a better fighter. Sometimes it's hard to do. It's hard for fathers who are trainers to give up control. Like, we've seen that with other fighters before, with a, you know, to a lesser degree, Kenny Porter with Sean Porter, with Teofimo Sr. and Teofimo Jr. Like, Bill Haney is kind of the shining example of what a father trainer should be.
The beacon of boxing.
There you go.
Good word.
Yeah.
That's what Bill Haney is, because he stays out the way, but he still has the pride and the confidence to speak up when someone needs to, you know, do more listening.
He just yells at me.
He's still the arbiter. Is that the word?
Yells at me a lot. It's consistent.
He's still the liaison. Is that the word?
No, what's not?
You know what I'm trying to say?
I do.
He's
not really.
There. He's
often
there
not.
Without being there. And that's what you want your father to be. Yes. Because he lets his son shine in. He brings in the exact same team that you need. You need that type of the team. Mickey Bay is a great addition. Ben Davidson, it can't get better than that. Mm-hmm. And you still have your father, your support, your bloodline in your corner, knowing that he's there. So it's just a perfect team. And that's the reason this young man, this champion, is being groomed for greatness.
Okay. All that being said, like you said, Jojo Diaz is a live underdog in this fight. He looked really good at 135 pounds in his win over Javier Fortuna. He's coming in with confidence. I believe, is he the first southpaw that Devin Haney has fought?
No.
I think he might be.
I think Gamboa was fighting from the southpaw stance.
Some of the notes I read that, at least before, is like early fights. Either way, like, he is going to present a very difficult challenge, because one thing we know about Jojo Diaz is that he is going to be there all night long. He's going to be in the face of Devin Haney trying to make it a rough physical fight. And I know that Jojo doesn't have that one-punch power, but he does have a level of physicality that other Haney opponents have not had up until this point. He's going to be trying to dig to that body. He's going to be hunting him around the ring. He's going to commit to this fight in great shape. How do you handle a fighter like Jojo Diaz if you're Devin Haney?
You know, I wouldn't describe Jojo Diaz as physical. I think he's a well-educated inside fighter that pressures intelligently. He wouldn't have made the Olympics if he was just a pressure fighter. If he was just a fighter that comes in trying to dig the body and be on the inside. No, Jojo is more than that. Jojo is a former U.S. Olympian. I mean, he's fought against the best, and he has a better resume than Devin Haney. So I'll give him that. He has a better resume
than
Haney.
Devin doesn't think so.
He doesn't think so, but, you know, I'm here to, you know, kind of disagree with him, because Linares is the only legitimate name on his resume. And Jojo, he's had, you know, they weren't great champions, but he's had former champions on his resume. Rene Alvarado, Andrew Cancio, you know, so the list is there. And if you really break down the numbers of his last eight opponents, they're solid names. So he's already made his bones fighting these guys. You look at the names that Devin Haney has fought, he's been impressive, but impressive against whom? You know, so the resume is on Jojo's part. The hunger, I think, is on Jojo's part, because anytime you get two fighters, one that's unblemished and infallible and perfect, never lost, and you got one that's already gone through the mills. So much personal things gone in his life, from becoming a father to fights canceled and managerial issues and promotional issues. And it's just so many things have gone wrong with him that he's already came out on the other side. Anytime you have a fighter not swallowed by darkness, man, they're dangerous. And that's Jojo.
You know, Diaz's team has made the comparison to Diaz being like Kambosos and Haney being like Teofimo Lopez, where Diaz is the more experienced fighter. He comes into the ring. Now, I don't know if I necessarily, like, Kambosos had years on Teofimo, but Teofimo went toe-to-toe with Vasily Lomachenko. He knocked out Richard Comey. He had that kind of experience. Do you think experience matters in a fight like this?
Experience always matters. And just to touch on what I just said, it wasn't promotional issues, because he's been with Golden Boy since day one.
Managerial issues, yes.
Managerial issues and just, you know, politics. But yeah, of course experience matters. Experience matters. And, you know, Jojo's what, in his late 20s? That's when you start realizing, you know,
physically prime years.
They are definitely prime years. You're nowadays, you're in your prime into your early 30s, 32, 33, maybe even 34 if you take care of your body. But so much shit has gone down in Jojo Diaz's life, from his personal issues to, you know, his public issues with courts and, you know, whatever. I don't want to continue doing that. But he's already past that. So in his personal life, in his professional life, this is a man, this is a young man that's already been through all that. Now it's all about hunger. Now it's all about achieving what he already, you know, let go of in the past, becoming a champion again and, you know, being a father for his son. And man, all this is inspiring for a fighter. That we do it for ourselves in the beginning when we're selfish, and we do it for our family when we're at JoJo stage. It's going to be a special fight because of that.
All right, everything, so how does he win? How does he win? Because in my opinion, he's just got to get to the inside.
He needs to get past the jab.
That, seven-inch reach advantage for Haney.
7 inches in reach and in height and in speed and in power. I wouldn't go as far as say that there's a power advantage, but you got to get past that jab. And I don't expect JoJo to have any success in the early rounds. As aggressive or as intelligent as he is, as much as he uses a southpaw stance and breaks distance, and he's really smart with his front foot, knowing how to sneak it in, all that's going to come into play into the mid rounds and the later rounds. Early rounds going to be Haney, man. It's hard to get past that strong jab. He's a high fight IQ, and he has something to prove as well. He has something to prove as well. So I just think the fight's going to get started in the fourth round. And if JoJo can get in the inside by the fourth round, we're going to have a fight. We're going to have a hell of a fight.
I agree.
All the way to the
I don't
end.
Think, look, JoJo doesn't have that one punch power Linares does, but if Haney gets sloppy, JoJo can catch him with something.
But he already learned his lesson. He got rocked by Linares.
He did. That's what I'm saying.
Because he was, they call it lazy in the fighter meetings. It wasn't lazy. It was content. What's the other word for being satisfied for what you're doing? Satisfied. Starts with a C. But anyway, he was happy with what he was doing. And he was complacent. Thank you, Todd Grisham, yes. Who is not the writer, by the way.
Correct.
He was complacent. He wasn't lazy. And you know what? I mean, it's rooted from laziness, but it's, I got this. I'm going to put it on cruise control, and then boom, a car comes from the left. That's what happened.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great fight no matter what. All right, on Sunday, Gervonta Davis is back in the ring against Isak Cruz. This is a fill-in opponent after Raleigh Romero backed out after being accused of sexual assault. Look, Davis is an incredibly, he's a very big puncher. In 135 pounds, he's shown that power carries at that weight class. But I guess the question is more like, do you look at Gervonta Davis in the same way you look at Devin Haney or JoJo Diaz or Teofimo Lopez or now George Kambosos? Like, I get tweets all the time, Sergio, every time I do a pound for pound list of like, where's Gervonta Davis? Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Why would I put, wait a minute.
Like, why?
Wait a whoa. Honestly, Chris Mannix cussed.
Why would I put Gervonta Davis in a pound for pound list? You talk about resumes. The guy's 27 years old. His best win came against Jose Pedraza. He's a 3-division title holder. Two of those titles are bullshit. Like, I'm not trying to hate on the guy. I want to see him in with top level guys. But, you know, while Isak Cruz is dangerous, a win over Isak Cruz to me is not going to tell me anything about Gervonta Davis.
Isak Cruz is one of these fighters that is really good, really strong, and you overlook. And that's where I think Tank Davis, if he's going to want to do what Teofimo did and get a quick knockout or maybe get complacent or content or go for chasing for something that he's not, then he's going to look bad. I mean, it's a change of opponent. That's always dangerous. It's always dangerous when you're preparing for somebody and then they throw a curveball as tough as, I call him Isaac, Isak Cruz. Tough Mexican that wants this opportunity to shine. Cruz will never be in this position again, this spotlight. He's going to take it for what it's worth. I mean, this is what they grow up in Mexico. I think he's from Guadalajara. This is what they grow up for that phone call. This is what they live for, and he's doing it with shining colors against Tank Davis, undefeated beast at the Staples Center in L.A.
He's got the pop
everything,
to hurt him.
Everything is there for Cruz. Everything he ever dreamed of came with that phone call. These are dangerous Mexicans. These are bad hombres.
Let me ask you this, though, Sergio. Like, with Gervonta, like, I get called a Gervonta hater all the time. I don't care. Like, Akin Barak call me a Gervonta hater, even though they freaking love the guy. But, like, do you think he should face top better opponents? I mean, the guy can lure top-level fighters to his side of the street. I mean, he is a moneymaker. He sells out arenas. He does big numbers. Like, he's the pay-per-view star. Like, what am I missing here? Why is Gervonta Davis, at 27 years old, not fighting these top guys?
They're taking the Floyd Mayweather.
It's not, though. That's a lie. That's bullshit. He's not taking the Floyd Mayweather approach because Floyd Mayweather, before he was Money Mayweather, had Genaro Hernandez on his resume. He had Diego Corrales on his resume. He had two fights with Jose Luis Castillo. Like, Floyd, say what you want about him, and he deserved a lot of criticism at times for not fighting Manny Pacquiao at the back end of his career, but early on, At 20, 21 years old, he fought tough friggin' fights. That guy went balls to the wall against some really tough fighters. That's not happening with Gervonta Davis. He's 27 with really one quality win on his resume.
Chris Mannix, you snowflake. You just said fucking shit on the same podcast. I'm telling your mommy.
That's a weird thing to say.
Look, a page from Floyd Mayweather, the second chapter of his career. Maybe not the first, not the lightweight, not that beast.
You can't be the second until you get the first.
Why not? They took a page out of the experience resume, the money Mayweather, not the pretty boy.
It's not that much money. Floyd was doing a million plus pay-per-view buys.
After De La Hoya, Floyd became a different fighter. He wasn't going for the knockouts.
But
he
need
was
a lightweight. De La
Hoya. He was content fighting behind a jab, check hooking
you. Stopped Ricky Hatton,
Yeah, and
that was the next fight out.
Later
think,
in
right?
the fight, and Ricky Hatton knocked himself out by being too aggressive.
That was a great knockout.
Yeah,
Ricky
I was
Hatton
there.
Went straight to the
straight
ring
into
rope.
The neutral corner. I think Tank Davis has taken a page from the Money Mayweather book, and I think that's great. That's smart.
You think that's great? You're out of your mind.
It's not great for boxing, but
then
it's great
what
for
are we doing
it's
here?
Great for Mayweather Promotions. It's great for Tank Davis, and it's great for the city of Baltimore and everything else is Tank, because this man is bringing big fights, and he's selling, by the way. Baltimore to Maryland, everywhere he goes, he's selling out. So he's putting asses in seats. People want to watch him fight.
Atlanta,
he has one of the
LA.
Highest knockout ratios.
I'm with you.
Look, all the above. I'm not even a Tank fan. I'm just telling you. I respect him for what he's doing. I respect for what Mayweather Promotions is doing. You have to respect that, because the boxers, we get into this business, make a lot of money, and knock mofos out, and he's doing it.
Okay. Don't you get in this business for another reason? Like respect, legacy, things like that? You beat Vernon Forrest. Like, I don't know. I have no idea how much money you made for that fight, but that was your legacy-defining fight and the contender.
Well, I'll tell you right now, Tank Davis making more money fighting Isaac Cruz than I did for Vernon Forrest. So it was a bad example there. But we're living in different times. We're living in different times where these fighters are getting a lot of money. And they don't need to fight. And they don't need to fight the hardest.
First of all,
best.
Pay-per-view buys, like, if let me just put this out there for listeners that are reading tweets or stories about what pay-per-view buys are. Anytime it is a one-sourced report on pay-per-view buys, it's bullshit. There is no incentive for a promoter to tell the truth when they call a reporter and say, this fighter did X pay-per-view buys. There is no downside to just making shit up. No downside whatsoever. So I understand Tank Davis sells tickets. Good for him. He is a bona fide star. He is, him and Ryan Garcia, the biggest stars in the lightweight division. But don't tell me he's like all these people are watching. Like, don't. I don't believe it.
What's hearsay?
It's an exaggeration.
Or is it libel?
It's not libel. It's not any of them. See, I don't want to get this confused, Sergio. I don't want to get this confused because I think Tank Davis is a lot of fun. I want to see him in fights. I want to see his next fight. I just don't care about Isak Cruz. I didn't care.
I don't care about him either, but it wasn't supposed to be Cruz. It was an interesting
I didn't care about
fight.
Raleigh Romero.
I cared about it.
Why?
Not because of the fight or what Romero brought to it, but the buildup. The buildup, it was near
some
my hometown.
Some of the worst trash talk I've ever heard in my life. Like, that was some goofy trash talk.
I don't care. I was looking forward to it, and he could punch.
It would have been a fun
and
action
punch.
Fight.
It would have been a fun
action
fight.
But if you're 27, don't you want to have a fight that matters? Like, if he wins this fight, do you think there's any chance he fights a Devin Haney or a Ryan Garcia or even a George Kambosos? Do you really believe that?
No, they're keeping it in-house. And
what I'm going to keep swearing this podcast.
I know, that's three.
What again? Why? What the bleep? Why? Keeping it in-house is the dumbest thing in the world. I got a tweet from somebody the other day who was like, why don't you talk more about Andrade against Golovkin or Munguia, because they're on the same platform. There are no fucking leagues in boxing. There are no leagues in boxing. So the second we in the media start accepting that as fact, like, you can't have Gervonta versus Devin because they're on different platforms and promoted by different people. If we accept that as fact, we're screwing the whole thing up. We're bad for the business. We should be pushing for these fights that seem impossible to happen and put pressure on these guys. So Charlo fight Andrade.
Why can't we all get along? Why can't we all get along, Mannix? Look, right now, this is politics. This is politics, baby. You're right wing, I'm left wing. This is the way it is. We can't meet in the middle. We can't meet in the middle for anything.
Yeah, but see
and
what the problem is? No, but see,
look,
and
it sucks,
it's
man.
Not a bad example.
It really does.
It's not a bad example.
And you talked about networks, Fox News, CNN,
it's
same
not,
old thing.
It's not a terrible example. But you know what fans don't care about? They don't care about the politics of boxing. If you know, Fury against Wilder, you think they gave a damn? It was a co-promotion and it was promoted by
great
two
example.
Different networks.
Great
like
example.
They don't care.
Great
they
example.
Want these big fights to happen. And I think it's ultimately on the fighters. Like Tank Davis, I know he's making a lot of money, But he's got to go to Floyd Mayweather. He's got to go to Al Haymon. He's got to go to Leonard Ellerbe and say, look, I want a big fight. Don't talk to me in 2022 unless it's against George Gamboses, Devin Haney, or Ryan Garcia. Because you know, Sergio, if Raleigh Romero comes out of this situation he's got relatively unscathed, he's going to fight him in the first half of 2022. You know,
that'll be
and
disappointing.
I know.
That'll be disappointing.
You think?
If his next fight is a Romero-type opponent. Even though I was excited for this fight because all the other lightweights were taken, if he comes back and fights that type of opponent, then I'm with you. But I'm fine with an Isai Cruz, and he could take care of business, knock him out, continue the knockout
streak. As a replacement?
Streak,
well, as I would say.
Continue the knockout streak and then face one of these lightweights or 140. I don't know what weight division he is. Is he 135 or 140?
He's got to be 135. He's 5 foot five. By the way, Regis Prograt his hand up, you know, as soon as that the Romero stuff went down.
I'm always going to be team Ruguru. Yes. I think he's a beast, and he only has one loss against the undisputed champion at 140.
Close decision too, yeah.
And it was a close fight, a hell of a fight. I want to see Ruguru back. Progress is no joke, and he needs the big fight. He's not getting the big fight. So right now we're talking about Tank and Isai Cruz. Cruz is going to put up a good fight, but it's not who we should be seeing Tank against.
All right, let's finish with George Gamboses, who is in Las Vegas this week. He will be in Los Angeles on Sunday for the Davis versus Cruz fight. George is now in a powerful position. He has 3.5 of the major titles, if you count the franchise championship, as a half a belt. Put yourself in George Gamboses' position. What would you do?
You're such a company man. What? 3.5 belts? No, he has all the belts.
Okay.
He has all the belts, and I'll say it.
Okay.
But I'm also going to say he's not undisputed. Because of the politics, because of exactly what we're talking about.
Todd Grisham is sitting here.
Because
Devin Haney is a world champion. Hold on. Did he not, Todd Grisham, say during, right before we went on the air last weekend, I'm calling him undisputed. Did he not say that?
He did.
Thank you, Todd Grisham. So you already called him undisputed.
I'm a company man, too. But let me tell you something. Whenever you have all the belts, you're not saying undisputed.
All right, you're confusing me here. Put yourself in George Gamboses' position. Say you just won. Say you actually fought Jermaine Taylor and beat and won the undisputed championship, which you didn't, over 100 grand, which is the most lunatic decision I've ever heard. You said it was 100 last time.
No, it was 150.
150. Okay, fine. Say you're the undisputed champion at lightweight. You're George Gamboses. What do you do next?
I do exactly what he's doing. He's going on the world tour, being a promoter, and he's soaking it in. Everywhere he needs to be, from the Knicks game to this fight, to every invitation they're reaching out to him to do. That's exactly what he does. Now, I hope he doesn't get soft. I hope he continues doing everything he did in the gym. But I love the world tour. I love the promotion. That's what fighters need to do more of. He's not getting paid for a lot of these things. He's doing
paid for none of them.
He's doing this because he knows how big of the world stopped for him. He knows how big this moment is. And you know what? Lou DiBella, who gets paid to promote, he's elated. He's like, this is what more fighters should do. And it's true. So Gamboses needs to go on that world tour, keep shaking the hands and kissing the babies, but get back to work and get hungry again.
You know what I love the idea of? I love the idea of if Devin Haney wins, George Gamboses, Devin Haney in Australia.
Oof.
Like, let's go. 80,000 yes, fans yes, in a stadium in yes. Australia. That would be great.
And I spent 2 months in Sydney, Australia with Shane Mosley. I can tell you, it's a great city, passionate fans, and they're rabid, but they don't have enough great fighters coming out of there. I mean, that's why they still pay for Anthony Mundine. You know, so they were excited about Shane Mosley fighting him out there, but they were more excited about Mosley than Mundine. So yes, this man just stopped the world in its tracks. He's everything great that Australia needs. Take it down under.
And I think it makes some financial sense too, because Devin Haney's not a big star here in the U.S. Like, he's got a name, and this fight's in Las Vegas, but it's not like Pacquiao going to Australia was a little bit weird, because Pacquiao does big site fees here in the U.S. Haney going to Australia, he probably makes the most money. Does it in front of a huge crowd, hostile atmosphere. He'd learn something from that. It'd be a great event. It'd be an unbelievable event.
I'm in, man. I'm in. Go to Australia. Go to Sydney especially. Put 80,000 people in seats. And if you can go all the way down there in a hostile environment where the judge is going to be against you and still come back with those belts,
yep.
Man, you're a star in your own hometown. And that's something that Devin Haney, even though he's being groomed for something special and great and a page off of Floyd Mayweather and Sugar Ray Leonard, you still haven't done that it thing yet.
Hey,
Devin Haney hasn't had that it moment yet.
You're right, but what was Floyd's, before Oscar, What was Floyd's star making
Chicanito
turn?
Chicanito Hernandez.
No, his star making
turn. Oh, I'm sorry, Arturo Gatti.
Yes, and what did he do? He went to Jersey for that. Yeah. He went to Arturo Gatti's backyard and battered him in New Jersey.
And,
like, that was the last time, I think, that he fought.
In brutal, fantastic fashion against a guy that's normally blood and guts warrior all the way to the end. So it showed you a mean side to Floyd Mayweather. He showed you that he could sell pay-per-views, and that's where he showed that he can be a pay-per-view star, and then he legitimized it with Oscar De La Hoya.
So it's not the same thing as going to Australia, but you go in somebody's backyard, there's something you gain from that. Like, you gain some respect out of doing it. And then you become more of a, I hate using this phrase all the time, a shot caller in that sense. Like, you go to Australia, win all the belts, all of a sudden you're the undisputed champion at 135, you can do some things.
Don't you ever say shot caller to me again.
All right, give the microphone to Todd Grisham here, because Todd, I do occasionally get tweets about other job. What's ESBC that? The game. People do ask me sometimes. They've actually asked me, can you get Grisham on for an update on the state of the game? You are vice president of whatever.
First of all, don't bring me on here at the tail end when everybody's already tuned out. I'm a main out. Eventer.
George Kambosos.
I should be on at the top of this show, beginning of the podcast.
George Kambosos is coming up next, so they're not tuned out yet. So
okay,
he is
George Kambosos. All right, I'll do that. I'm before Kambosos.
You were pre-Kambosos.
I'm the co-main.
Give me the state of the game there, Todd.
State of the game is excellent. Basically, a lot of people are upset about, like, when is it going to be released? What's the release date? You said that basically when I came on board, this was going to be like a local play at the Pitch and Putt Theater in downtown Main Event, in Main Town, USA, whatever. It's gotten bigger and bigger and better. So now all of a sudden we're releasing, it's going to be a massive, huge movie released worldwide starring The Rock and Leonardo DiCaprio, and, you know, because we've got every big name fighter. So when you've turned it into something that massive and has that much expectations, it's going to take longer to put it together. You don't sign Deontay Wilder on a Monday and his character's ready to go on Wednesday. You've got to get him in. You've got to get him scanned. You've got to get his body. You've got to do this. You've got to even just the hair on his head when he gets hit has to be individually done by these renderers and these artists. It's insane what they do. But it's just basically the delay is because the game has become bigger than any of us could possibly imagine.
Can you pinpoint a release time frame?
I'll let you know soon.
Okay. Well, stick around for that. Follow Todd.
Well, it's not my call. I'm not. You know, if you said, hey, when are you going to get this guy signed? I'd be like, well, that's my job.
There's an interest in the boxing game. Oh, yeah. High level
it's
interest.
Big. I'll be so big soon because I'm the voice of the game. I'll be so big so soon. I won't be coming on for 1 minute on your podcast.
That's fine.
Right?
We'll bring Corey Erdman back on, and he'll
you crush love
you.
Corey Erdman, man.
I do love Corey. Erdman.
Why do you love Corey so much?
I like Corey. He's a boxing nerd.
He is a boxing nerd.
I'm a boxing nerd. He's
and Sergio,
a boxing
tell him what else Corey Erdman loves.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Corey Erdman wrote a hell of an article, and he's a lot better writer than you.
Thank you. All right. Watch us on Saturday. Jojo Diaz, Devin Haney, lightweight title fight. I got nothing else to say to you. I'm good.
Viva Canada, Corey Erdman.
When we come back, my conversation with George Kambosos. With big fights every week, there's never been a better time to give FanDuel Sportsbook a shot and join the action on FanDuel Fight Nights. Because right now, you can place your first bet risk-free. That's right, you get up to $1,000 back if you don't win. FanDuel gives you so many bets to choose from. There are parlays, round props, method of victory bets, and so much more. The bet I like this weekend, Gervonta Davis to get stopped by Isaac Cruz. That's right, Isaac Cruz by knockout over Gervonta Davis. The odds are a little bit too high in favor of Davis in this one. I like Cruz to come up with a big stoppage. Offers like this are just one of the many reasons I love betting on FanDuel. It's the number one rated sportsbook app in America. It's easy to use. It's safe and secure. There are fast payouts. And when you win, you'll get paid in as little as 2 hours. With FanDuel in your corner, you'll always get exclusive odds boosts, great promotions, and so much more to make your FanDuel fight night even more exciting. That's why they're America's number one sportsbook. So sign up with the promo code BOXING to bet risk-free up to $1,000 on FanDuel Sportsbook. Download FanDuel today. That's promo code BOXING. All right, George Kambosos, interview number 9,462. Am I close this week? Is that how many interviews
probably,
have you done so far?
Maybe a little bit more, actually.
A little bit more, encompassing, what, at least three states, right? New York, Florida, and now we're here in Las Vegas, right?
And obviously, I've got to get all the way to Australia, too, which is going to be pretty crazy. So, two countries as well. It's part of the game. I'm in a position where, how can I say no? You know, this is something that I've worked towards for such a long time. You know, how can I not enjoy this and be with the media and let the people see who I am?
You went from unheralded title challenger on Friday to a guy on, what, Wednesday punching the Miami Heat mascot at a Heat basketball game. Like, it's been quite the turnaround for you, George.
Yeah, it really has, you know, especially when Bernie, the Miami Heat mascot, tried to get in my face and show that he was the champion with his WBC belt. You know, I had to give him the right hand I landed on Lopez and put him down and take his belt. But it's been crazy, man. But, you know, it's all part of it. And, you know, I stay focused. I don't lose who I am, with or without the belts, with or without the stardom right now. Mm. You know, I'll be in the gym tonight.
Well, let me start by congratulating you on the win and preemptively, I guess not preemptively anymore, apologizing for inheriting the is he or is he not undisputed champion mantle. Like, you now, all the questions Teofimo had to answer about being undisputed, they are now
passed on
to you, my friend.
Yeah, look, and like I've been saying, I really don't care. Undisputed, unified, undisputed, you know, no belts, you don't want to call whatever. I don't really care. I love to fight. I love to win. And, you know, I'm the number one guy. Mm. With or without the belts right now, I'm the number one guy. I showed that against Lopez.
Did it ever pass through your mind not to pay the sanctioning fee for the WBC belt? Just because, I mean, you're focused on winning, and all you care about is beating Teofimo Lopez, but that belt is so convoluted in how many ways it's gone around.
I look at that belt as a super belt, and you know, if I was to not pay that sanctioning fee, you know, I mean, I wanted everything. I knew that they were all on the line. You know, I wanted that WBC belt. Mm. You know, regardless of what everyone thinks, you know, 50% of the world love it, 50% of the world don't love it. It's a WBC title. And at the end of the day, if there were no belts on the line, only a WBC franchise belt, it would still be a world championship fight. Mm-hmm. So that's a world title. If I got rid of everything and just kept that, that's a world title. Mm. So that means a lot to me as well. So no, I never thought about that. And again, I wanted my coaches to get that WBC trainer belts as well, which two of them will be getting.
So we are here in Las Vegas, where Devin Haney will defend his version of the WBC title against Jojo Diaz. Before I get into that, just this week in general, 4 days removed now from you winning the biggest fight of your life, becoming unified, undisputed, whatever you want to call it, lightweight champion, what have these last few days been like for you?
Look, it's been very busy. No celebration. Haven't even had time to watch the fight. You know, social media's blowing up, but a lot of media work. Like you said, 9,000 something, maybe even more, crossing three different states. You know, but you know, it's part of the game, and it's something that, you know, I've envisioned for a long time. You know, people ask me that, has it sunk in yet? It sunk in many years ago because I knew this was coming. I knew I'd be world champion. You know, you look at my career, the way I was and my confidence, and you look at the Selby fight and this fight, I haven't changed. It's been the same. And I won't change. Nothing will change. Everything remains the same. My team remains the same, you know. And that hunger gets even more now because I love that mark of now being hunted. I've always been the hunter, but now I'm hunted. I've got everyone coming at me, so I've got to be really focused on who is going to come my way.
You've posted on social media some of the people you've heard from. You got a tweet from Manny Pacquiao. I saw you on a FaceTime with Jake Paul. Who's the person you heard from that really stands out the most out of all the people that have reached out to you in the last couple of days?
Look, the Manny Pacquiao tweet was the most, you know, when I saw it straight away, you know, I felt that more excited than the actual fight and winning the belts, because he's a legend. You know, he's a guy that I looked up to from a young kid. You know, I would be waking up Sunday morning early to go watch his fights at the pub in Australia with me and my father and the boxing friends. You know, I'd be excited. The De La Hoya fights, the Ricky Haddon fights, the Cotto fights. You know, so then when I got the opportunity to be sparring him and be with him, you know, was amazing. And just to know that he's proud of me, you know, it's incredible. That really, you know, hit that point where, you know, he's in your corner now. He's with you.
And you were in multiple camps with Pacquiao, right? It wasn't just a one-off.
No, three world title campaigns with him. I knew that them 12-round campaigns, doing everything he was doing, the sparring together, the running together, the bag work, the pad work, we were doing exactly what he was doing. So I knew that that would be great for when I got to my 12-round fights, when I got to the big fights. And in that fight, you would have seen there was a lot of Pacquiao style in that fight, the bouncing, the movement, the three, four, five punch combinations, the angles, you know, and then coming back. I learned a lot from him. You know, I'm taking that into these big fights.
You had a lot of skeptics coming into that fight with Teofimo. And being honest, I was probably one of them. I mean, and maybe it's a recency bias with me, because the week before, I had heard Jason Quigley say a lot of the same things you had said. Like, I'm confident, I'm prepared, I'm ready for Demetrius Andrade. And he goes out and gets knocked out in two rounds. I mean, beyond the confidence, what made you believe that you had what it takes to do exactly what you did?
You know, the way I prepared for the fight, you know, the hard work that I put in, you know, the sacrifices I made to be away from my kids and family.
Do you think those were different, though? Like, I mean, fighters, I give them a lot of credit. A lot of them make sacrifice. I mean, Devin and JoJo for this fight coming up on Saturday, they made a lot of sacrifices. Like, do you feel like you went above and beyond?
Yes.
And because it was, I guess it was delayed so many times, you had to keep doing it.
I never took my foot off the brake. You know, I left no stone unturned. Like I said, you know, I had the birth of my third child and the passing of my grandfather on the same day. And I still trained that night. That's the difference. That's the 1%ers that get you from being a good fighter to a great fighter to, obviously, you know, a champion. You know, that there is the difference in this fight.
Mm-hmm. You said you haven't watched the fight back. The first round, like, you, for the first minute and a half, Teofimo was throwing bombs at you. As he's doing that, and you're feeling that power for the first time, what's going through your mind?
I said, this is what the hype is about. This is the power. And he landed a couple clean shots. Mm-hmm. I said, this is it. Okay, I'm going to set you up now, like we planned, like I had in my head. You know what I mean? And like the great Customato said, you know, you land that first shot in the early round, mm-hmm. that round one, you get the respect straight away. So I knew it was coming. Shot that we worked on for many, many months. And that chin, that head was in the same position the whole time. And you can see it. I stepped back twice. And on the third step back, it was like a half step back. As he went heavy on the front foot on that jab, the right hand was there, fast. He never saw it coming. And that's the most dangerous part. When you don't see the shot coming, that's when you get put down. You know, so I saw his shots. That was slow motion. There was no real speed there. You know, there is okay speed, but not, you know, dynamic speed. And I'm used to dynamic speed from what I throw, but, you know, being in with Pacquiao, that's dynamic speed. And with punching power, it's okay, but it ain't, you know, out of this world. You know, I don't think any lightweight in this world, you know, has any serious hands that are going to hurt me, because I've been in there with these big guys. I've been in there with these legends. I'm accustomed and conditioned to that. So, you know, it was good.
Well, when you do watch the fight back, the moment before you knocked him down, I think I said something like, oh, I don't think George Gambosis wants to do this. Yeah. And then pow, you
dropped
him.
Beautiful
shot. Shot over the top. So
yeah, well, I have seen obviously the knockdown.
We'll add that to the list of dumbass calls I've
made. Yeah, I have heard that one. And there was another one too, I think you were calling, that is a pre-fight nerves when I was waiting to come out.
Yeah.
And obviously, no. And I know the zone, and I hope Eddie hasn't fired whoever was telling me, you got to go, because I'm going to get fired here. And I turned around and said, no, I ain't going yet. The song has to play.
No, you know what? I didn't think it was nerve. Sergio might have said it was nerve.
Someone said, yeah.
Yeah. I thought you were doing it tactically to kind of make him wait. Or I didn't know why you were doing it. But I don't think it was. You were definitely not nervous.
The song had to go. The song had to play. The crowd had to hear, you know, King Leonidas say them words. And then when I turned around, and obviously he says, Persians, come and get it. Literally for me saying, Lopez, come and get it. And then it kicks off to, you know, the ring song. You know, that's part of the act. That there, everyone was freezing, thinking, wow, this guy's coming for war. And then when I stood at the end of the ring there, when I walked up and I looked at the crowd like a man possessed, and they're booing me, and my eyes are just glaring with excitement, because I love that. I thrive on that. And I come to the corner, my dad goes, they booed you now. They're going to applaud you. And I knew that already in my head. They're going to applaud me. And when I stood on top of them ropes at the end of the round 12, and I'm bleeding and I'm wiping the blood, and obviously Eddie would have heard it. I'm saying the blood is for you guys. You know, that's things of movies. But
mentioned the Customato line a couple of times, and I mean, you land that shot, and in what way does that shot change the fight?
Dramatically changes the fight, and I knew it would, because all of a sudden they never expected me to punch the way I punch. They didn't think the speed and the accuracy was that. You know, so that all of a sudden puts him in two minds. That makes him hesitant straight away. And even times when he was coming in, I was showing him the right hand. I was looking like I'm going to throw it, pop the jab, throw the hook. You know, just My ring IQ is so underestimated. Just go back to the Selby fight and even the Mickey Bay fight. You know, for me to be able to outbox these guys that are veterans, that especially Selby, is a pure boxer, pick him apart. I knew that, that Lopez wouldn't be able to handle what I brought to the table with my boxing IQ. And you know, I hope I showed the world not only the heart that I have and to give a fight of the year, but you know, show my boxing skills and my ring IQ.
So you talked about training during the passing of your grandfather. Is it true that your son was born the same day?
Same day my son was born. And
so you saw the highs and lows that
day. Yeah, it was a tough day. But throughout it all, I trained that night because I was so embedded in the fight. And, you know, I didn't get to grieve my grandfather. I didn't get to enjoy the birth of my third child. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just so focused and zoned in, you know, like a man possessed. Mm-hmm. And now that I've done it, I'm even more possessed. Mm-hmm. Because there's so much more to achieve.
How close were you with your grandfather?
Very close. So we share the same name. Mm-hmm. You know, very close. And you know, it's something not to be sad about anymore. Mm-hmm. Because I know that he's here. He's probably here in this room. the presence that I felt before I walked out in the dressing room, the Greek flag that we had up next to the Australian flag, it fell when the cameras came on, and then I felt like a touching feeling on my shoulder. And I felt that presence, and I looked at my dad, I go, he's here. Mm-hmm. I knew from that moment, there is no doubt in my mind that I'm winning this fight and he's protecting me. So it's a crazy, crazy world.
What would he have said if he had been alive to speak to you after this fight?
I just said, you done it, you know. Mm-hmm. You made the Cambosis name proud. Mm-hmm.
The 10th round where things started to change a little bit, where Teofimo lands that right hand, what were you feeling when it landed? And you see the clock, there's a minute 49 or so to go when you get up. What's your mindset as you're trying to finish that round?
You know, I was angry at myself because I lost composure mm-hmm. for that split second. And I was getting too excited with the crowd and the fans, and I smelt the blood. And I thought, you know what, I'm picking this guy apart. I'm going to try to finish him off now. Let me land that shot again. And I could see his face getting brutalized. I got put down, but it's part of the story. It showed, you know, my heart and what I'm about. And I knew when I went down, I got up. I knew there's still plenty of time in the round, mm-hmm. minute 45 to be exact. And I said, okay, control yourself, get back to your jab, hold if you have to hold, and you're going to show how great you are. Mm-hmm. And I finished that round strong, landed some really good shots. But what happens next is what defines my career and will be something that, you know, I hope young kids can look at when they look at boxing. I come to the corner, I'm smiling, I'm laughing. My coaches, are you okay? Why are you laughing and smiling? I go, I made the mistake there. You watch now. I'm going to punish him now for the next two rounds. And that's what I did. Mm-hmm. In round 11, I destroyed him. Blood. And round 12 closed out the show. But I have heard, I don't know how accurate it is, but I have heard from his team members that when he came for round 11 and sat in that corner, obviously after scoring the knockdown in round 10, he said, I can't put a dent in him. Mm. The guy's, he's made of steel. That there just shows not only him, but shows the world, you know, what I'm about.
It's a line out of the Rocky movie.
It was a Rocky movie. The underdog story. The guy who, you know, really shouldn't be here. Mm. You know, the big odds against him. You know, and then scores the knockdown. And then, you know, just has everything inside him to win the fight. Mm. And the speed, the power that I brought into that fight, you know, shocked the world. And obviously, then I get dropped. I think, okay. Anyone in the world probably at that moment said, no, he's gone. Mm. Any other lightweight at that stage in the world probably doesn't survive. Mm. But I survived. Something inside me, and it might have been my grandfather, might have been that hunger and that willpower, the condition that I prepared for this fight. You know, that's a true warrior right there.
Did it surprise you in that 10th round? It surprised me that Teofimo didn't try to kind of swarm you a little bit. He seemed, and he's known for his knockouts come off one punch, you know, Comey and whatever. I thought with a minute and a half to go, he'd try to get a referee to stop it. And maybe if he swarmed you fast enough, Harvey Dock might have stepped in and stopped it. Did that tactic, or is not taking that tactic, surprise you?
Yeah, I think from the first round, because he felt the power. Mm. And then obviously what happened to him in the first round, you know, he knew that how dangerous I am. And even at a moment where I'm facing big adversity, you know, I'm extremely dangerous because I was throwing punches. It wasn't like I was just covering up and seriously hurt. You know, the feet were a little bit wobbly, mm-hmm. but I was throwing punches, firing back. A big risk for myself. I could have got caught seriously and been pulled out. But shows I'd rather fight fire with fire at the hardest point where I'm fighting adversity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a line you can use in anything you do. When you're at your worst adversity, you know, meet it head on, mm-hmm. fight it, you know, fire with fire. And that's what I did. And I finished that round strong.
Mm-hmm.
And that mentally broke him as well. Mm-hmm. That there, mentally, spiritually, physically, everything, that broke him right there. And I came out round 11, you know, and done what I done.
The bell rings, and look, I scored it 114, 112 for you, but we're in New York. Judging is not always the most reliable throughout boxing. I mean, does it occur to you at any point before they announce the scores that, man, I might not get this?
No, not at all. I knew I'd won the fight. To be honest, in my head...
It doesn't always matter, though, if you want, like, you know, with judging.
I knew they were going to take this away from me. I just knew it. I had that inside me that I've given too much for this fight. This is my time. This is my destiny. And it was not going away from me. And we know when they said, and then you, it was beautiful.
Now, did you feel, because the referee, I don't know if he made a mistake or not, but he raised Teofimo's hand first.
I didn't see it until I've looked at the...
I think he just heard, my guess is he heard still undefeated.
Yeah, because...
I'm
undefeated as well. So, you know, it is what it is. Makes part of the moment and the fight. And, you know, we won the fight.
So your tour is wrapping up here. You're in Las Vegas to watch Devin Haney fight. You'll be in Los Angeles to watch Gervonta Davis fight. New York after that, are you going back to?
No, I'm going to head home. I need to be with my kids.
The lightweight division is in action, you know, and your prospective opponents will fight over the next couple of weeks. What's your mindset as you go into 2022 as something of a shot caller in this division?
You know, the hunger and the fire burns way more than what it did before the belts because I got that target on my head. So, like I said, I'll be in the gym tonight, putting in the work, and people think...
You can take a full week off, Matt. Like, you can just, you know,
I said it today, if someone pulls out, you know, bring the checkbook out and I'll fight.
You're fighting this week.
You know, I'll put on the fight gear that I had for the Lopez fight with full of blood and I'll fight. I love to fight.
Non-title fight, though. You know? Non-title fight.
Yeah, put them all on the line, doesn't matter. The sanctioned body's going to love me.
There's too much money on the line for...
You know, it's
but what matters to you in this next fight? Is it collecting all those titles? Is it cashing the biggest check humanly possible? Both of which you deserve after a fight like that. What matters to you the most?
Everything's going to come. Everything is coming no matter what. But legacy is very important.
Mm.
You know, the fans will see the legacy that I have and to continue my reign as champion of the world.
Mm.
You know, legacy is more important than money. But I know the money's going to be there anyway. Mm. But the money, I'm not a materialistic kind of guy. It's not really for me. Mm. It's for my kids. I've got three kids, so that's what it's for.
Is it Australia matter to you fighting
there? Yes, 100% Australia matters because I've had to take the hard road. I've had to do it the hard way. I want these guys, because I'm in the driver's seat now, to feel that, to be away from the comfort zone, to travel thousands of miles away to a foreign land, to have all odds against them, to have the crowd against them, and there'll be 80,000 of them, I'm telling you now, of Greeks and Australians, Greeks, and everyone else that rocks up to the fight.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be mental. Mm-hmm. So it matters a lot to me.
Last question for you. You said you're hungrier now. During the build-up for the Teofimo fight, you pointed at him and said, I'm hungrier than you.
Yep.
And you were the challenger going into that. How do you maintain that hunger? How do you stay as hungry as you were? Because that clearly was impactful in you winning this fight.
I didn't get caught up in the bright lights, you know. I'm here, obviously doing the media work, but that is business. This is business for me. I'm not on the strip enjoying my time and acting a fool. You know, that is very important. I go back home, I'll be a family man, and I keep doing what I do best in the gym. That's where I feel at peace. That's what I love to do to get better. And I know that fight with Lopez, honestly, there's so much more for me. There is moments in that fight that I can remember. And when I sit back and watch the fight properly, that I'll be even better, be more destructive, more explosive, faster, stronger. So that's the next step. They saw something, but I'm going to be another whole dimension. Just as like you saw me from the Selby fight. If you go off the Selby fight, which many did, especially the bookmakers, I don't stand a chance. But I got better. Again, like Gustamato would say, you get better every day. Every day, without a doubt, you're getting better and better. And that's what I did. And that's what I will continue to do with now being the champion, being the person I am now. I keep that focus, that tunnel vision, no matter what. And if for some reason I won't, I think my father over there will slap me over the head. So I'll definitely keep that focus.
Dad over in the corner nodding his head saying, George, congratulations, man. And take some time off, man. Don't get back in the ring anytime soon. Don't
also,
get back in the ring.
Also, you're going to come running with me tonight on the treadmill.
I'm trying to get to cruiserweight here, George. This is what I'm trying to do. Just get me to cruiserweight and I'll be happy, man. Good to see you, man.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Sergio Mora and George Kambosos for joining the show. As always, subscribe, rate, review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download podcasts. And we'll see you next week.